Welcome to The Last Man. How are you doing today, Derek?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Today is Thursday, December 12th, 2024. It's been an interesting few weeks. How have things been with you?
Oh, it's been pretty good. You know, everything is getting ready for Christmas. You know, got the tree up, the lights. You know, got the presents. You know, I'm ahead of the game this year.
Right. Nice.
Yeah. So how about you?
Yeah. We've got same. We got the tree set up and we're ready. It's a lot. I always feel a sense of, I don't know, maybe exhaustion or exhaustion or they're on this time of year. There's just so many different aspects of it. You know, we have a large family, which is a great thing, but we end up bouncing from one place to another. Not trying to complain. I'm happy to have.
I got you.
Have a large and colorful family, but it ends up making this time of year pretty. It can be hectic. So, but this year we're staying in town, so that's good. We're not leaving the state at all. We typically leave for a while, but this year I think we're gonna get to stay put. So that's good.
Yeah, now I have to be on the road driving like 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
That's always a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Some years we've really made a journey. The year before last, we went down to southern Alabama and spent the holidays down there, and then immediately after Christmas turned around and drove to Maryland.
Ooh.
Which, with a dog in tow, and it was like a 20-hour drive.
That's a big drive.
It was a lot. I pulled over just out of the mountains in Virginia, I think it was Virginia. Pulled over and just slept. Like I had to crash out and sleep. So, yeah. You know.
I thought you were gonna say you pulled over and started crying.
No, it would have been warranted, but no. It was a long trip. We were going to see friends in Maryland, in Annapolis.
Good friends.
Yeah, right. Right, obviously. But yeah, it was a good time. But yeah, so it's been an interesting, like I said, an interesting couple weeks. Lots going on news-wise. And so what I figured we would do today is let's kind of get back to some of the things that we intended to cover, as far as rather than just purely combing through news stories, which we can do. Let's get to some of the stuff that's going on, because it seems like, you know, we're intentionally attempting to handle race relations or the angle of race relations. And so let's kind of get into some of that stuff. There are a few issues going on right now that I think we can tackle and kind of get into. But does that sound good? Sound okay?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
So one of them, the first one that comes to mind is it Daniel Penny? Is that
Daniel
what
Penny.
The, yeah, the
subway.
The subway in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because, you know, for anybody that's not familiar with it, it was a prior Marine who was on a subway when an irate passenger began threatening, acting out, threatening other passengers.
Yeah, threatening their life.
Exactly. Yeah. Eventually verbally threatening their lives and saying he didn't care to go to jail and all, you know, just a whole lot of stuff. And there was a Marine on board who stepped up and put him in a chokehold and held him for 4 minutes, and apparently held him for 4 minutes. And he was just acquitted either yesterday or today, I guess. In the last day or two, he was just acquitted by a jury of his peers in New York. They found that there wasn't any evidence to determine him to be guilty of, I think the charge was second-degree murder is what they were going after. But But yeah, and so it's kind of sparked off this, you know, there are some catalyzing events, you know, that like the George Floyd incident that kind of triggered a whole series of additional discussions at the national level. And this one is because the Marine was white and the young man, what was his name? Let's see, it was...
Yeah, I guess relatively young. I think he was around 30.
Yeah, he was 30 years old, Daniel Penny. And I want to find the... Yeah, with... Let's see here. So it was Jordan Neely. Yeah. It was a 30-year-old homeless man in New York on the subway. And he was black. And so there have been a lot of discussions that have fired off of this around race and the race, the role race plays in this. And I don't know, do you want to take a, like, what do you see so far just from what we've looked at, and, you know, what are your thoughts on it so far?
I mean, after everything I learned about the case, I think he was, you know, fully justified in what he did. I think that where we disagreed on, I think I said he should have got some type of probation or something, just like for just simply because, you know, he's a trained military man. He knows how to handle combat situations and mm-hmm. everything. But I rescind that because he really didn't do anything that appeared to cause his death. I mean, after the autopsy, they really didn't verify, like, if he was choked to death or not.
Right. it was where the medical examiner didn't originally conclude that there was an identifiable cause of death, and then apparently afterwards watched the video and saw it and then determined that it was choking or strangulation or something like that. But there were no marks.
Hmm.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so I feel he was, like, fully justified. But so as far as that, I don't think it had anything to do with, you know, the man being black and him being white.
Right.
You know, there's black passengers on the train, and I think he wasn't alone. I think two other people were actually helping them, mm-hmm. you know, with this guy, where he was the one holding him.
Right.
So...
Yeah, apparently they didn't even realize that he had.
Yeah, they
didn't think he had passed at the time. Apparently they said they thought he was breathing okay, and one of them didn't even find out about it until the news story broke saying that he had passed away.
Yeah, she didn't know he had passed, you know, and told the story because he looked like he was, you know, he's fine.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So yeah, it's a weird thing. I wouldn't see this as a racial thing.
Right.
At all. This is more of a mental health issue than anything else.
I agree.
You know, I mean, I hear stories about this in New York all the time where, you know, people are walking up, like, who have issues like this gentleman had and just attacking people.
Right.
You know, when you're yelling out saying, like, you don't care if you die or not, and you have, you know, willing to stab people or hurt people.
Right. Ready to go back to prison. Yeah.
Yeah, for any reason. Yeah, it's good to have men like him, you know, to step up and,
right,
you know, take charge and, you know, make sure that nobody gets hurt, especially when you have, you know, women and children on the train.
Right. Yeah. That he was protecting.
Right.
Right. And that was definitely a piece of this that I noticed was the fact that he had harassed a few other passengers, threatened some of them, and he... From what I've heard, it sounds like he just felt like he couldn't stand by and give this guy the chance to make good on his threats. And so he stepped up, and apparently he wasn't, like, choking the life out of him. He was just holding him. Now, there are other complications, you know, complicating factors. For example, I believe he had been using drugs. I think there were drugs in the system.
K2. Yeah.
Is that what it was called? Which I'm not familiar with.
I'm
but
not
it,
either.
Huh. It's that... It just it introduces another variable into the mix. But I think the biggest problem is what would happen if you prosecuted this Marine, this young man. the message you're sending is, even if you're in a situation where someone is threatening harm and threatening other people's lives, you can't do anything, because if you act, you're likely to go to prison. I think it's a horrible message to send in the for fear of vigilantism, right? Which, if that were an issue, I could see trying to come up with a deterrent for it. If you had situations where people were constantly jumping in and harming people to protect, to look like they're protecting somebody, but on a one-off situation like this, where he had either had 42 police encounters on the subway in previous years or previous
right.
times.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
It was obvious. It was, to me, it starts to appear that the city is making a conscious choice by not addressing, or by setting policies the way they are, by not addressing things in a certain way, to mm-hmm. sort of pass the buck on handling these situations to other people. Police will come out, but if he's just yelling and not, you know, not doing anything threatening, if he's just causing a disturbance or trying to talk people into this, then we're just going to go ahead and go about our way. And you know, he didn't really do anything. That's a decision to pass the buck. Now, the problem is, it's not, unfortunately, and this kind of gets into a bigger issue. I've heard the argument in this country that, or I've heard the argument that in this country, we largely subsidize the mental health industry and mental health treatment needs out to prisons, right? Because it's some crazy high statistic of prisoners in our already insanely high incarcerated population that are undergoing mental health treatment. So it starts to look like, you know, we're passing the buck of mental health administration to the prison system. And so it sort of ties into this larger conversation of how do we stop this cycle of attempting to use, you know, the problem with the prison system is, you know, in the land of hammers, everything looks like a nail, right? So if you use a prison system to administer mental health, you know, you're not really using the right job for the right problem. But I don't know, it's a complicated issue of how our judicial or our prison system is flailing right now. So
yeah, maybe institutions need to be on the rise, like mental institutions.
Yeah, well, that's like a throwback to the, well, I guess all of history. I think we had them for a very long time. Back as far as the 50s, I think they were used a lot. Mm. As a matter of fact, I think there used to be like women, when they were pregnant, would end up going to them. It was crazy.
It was definitely a weird time, especially if you're a woman, like you'd be committed by your husband.
Right. Right. Because you're ill-tempered when you're pregnant. Yeah. Or she's acting crazy. Yeah.
She didn't cook my breakfast or my dinner. So.
That's awful. Yeah. But that's, I guess, what we're talking about. It's wild.
I hope we progressed, along from that point.
Yeah. And I think we have, but still it's something like a significantly, I want to say it's like 5 or 7% of the number of people that used to be incarcerated. If you go back to the 60s and 70s, it's only like 5 or 7% that are actually still in some sort of institution or still receiving some sort of mental health treatment. And you realize that as a society on the whole, we've shifted not just to using the prison system to do it, but we've shifted toward using the for-profit prison system in many circumstances to handle these situations.
Yeah.
And which introduces a whole other set of questions about, you know, things like institutionalization and recidivism and all of the different stuff. But yeah, I would say that's a good outcome. California has a history of making different types of decisions in these types of circumstances. And it's led to, you know, a lot of people a lot of people struggling with the situation in California. You know,
I mean, you're seeing that everywhere. Just not just with that, but things in general. And you were talking earlier, like, you know, police are not allowed to like stop thieves from stealing.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Just incentivize people to go and steal because they can't get caught unless some citizen does something, and then of course they can be sued.
Yeah.
By that person.
What was the case we were looking at? It was a police chase where the person that the police were chasing struck a vehicle and killed a 7-year-old girl and injured a 5-year-old boy that were in the back seat, and the parents were awarded $80 million
from the police department.
I think that was Chicago. Wasn't that Chicago?
I think it was Chicago. I'm not sure.
But it kind of sparked, because Tennessee and Nashville, we have a non-pursuit law, right? So they don't pursue for that reason. They'll do their best to stay with them enough to get like larger eye, like get a helicopter's eyes on, and then follow them.
Yeah, basically containing them. Yeah.
Right. We had a case about that, I want to say 2 years ago, where there were people that were street racing through the Nashville area, and the police officers had a strict non-pursuit policy in place, and so they just when they knew they were going to be there, they just started having the chopper show up, and they would call them out, and then the chopper would just follow them from on high and track them to where they were going, and then go follow them to their house, right, wherever they go after that. And they ended up making a number of arrests, and they largely arrested the street racing problem that was going on in the South Nashville area at the time. But
yeah, I think it's still pretty strong.
It still happens. Yeah. I would argue nowhere near like it used to. It used to be, I mean, you'd just hear it all hours of the night, and it was wild.
Yeah, I think the most recently, like maybe this year, maybe a few months ago, they had a bust like that was similar in the neighborhood. That they called a ringleader who was organizing these street races.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, I mean, they should catch them and just, I don't know what they actually do. Like, do they auction off the cars or do that? I wouldn't auction them off. I would just break them down. That's what I do. I sell them parts by parts.
Well, I'm sure there are stipulations on in which situation you can seize private property. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that if it's used in the commission of a crime or if it's somehow gotten by ill-gotten gains or something like that, it could be taken. But if it's your vehicle, I don't think they can seize it from you, and except under certain circumstances. Like if it's been proven that you were stealing or, you know, running from a bank that you just robbed or something like that. But I don't know.
Street racing should be a special case.
Just, you think so?
Yeah.
That problematic, huh? Right.
Man, it's nothing like 3 a.m. You hear screeching tires and everything. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild, and it's been going on a lot in Nashville. I know someone who was sitting in his house, and he was on his computer like 10 o'clock at night. And now this wasn't racing, but someone drove through his neighborhood. Two people, one of them was a car was shooting at another one, and put a bullet through his arm. And he's a prior service member, but put a bullet through his arm, and just out of the blue, random. Just sitting in your bedroom, get shot. So it's and that was out in, you know, about 30 miles. That was in the Murfreesboro area, so not far, just right outside Nashville. But yeah, it's wild. There's just a lot of Nashville's going through a lot of growing pains because we've historically been a smaller town, but you know, now that we are pushing the 2 million mark, it's just getting larger Yeah, it's just adjusting.
Adjusting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, when we were kids, there were 500,000 people here. So it's quadrupled in our lifetime, which it's a pretty quick growth rate. So.
Yeah, if you drive anywhere in Nashville and you've been here all your life, you definitely see that growth happening.
For sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, so that was one. That sparked off a whole series of different discussions and interviews. I saw someone from on up the BLM hierarchy, you know, doing an interview, and I worry about being so quick to play the race card, right? I think we have to be careful about crying racism, because, you know, if it's like crying wolf, I think we have to make sure that situations where that's happening is right. When it's happening. But this definitely got heated around that issue, although, you know, I think it was pretty easy to ultimately put down and say, no, that's not what was going on, right? I mean, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. But definitely need to, you know, pick your battles.
Yeah. Because there are situations where it's needed.
Right. And you don't want to keep doing that. Like, some people are just not going to believe anything you say.
Right. Right. Well, and then there is, this one struck me as odd. So this one is the Biden administration clearing the border wall parts for the auction ahead of Trump's second term. It's talking about clearing out supplies and portions of the border wall and actually putting them up for auction before he gets back in. This one strikes me as weird. It says it's very heavily right. So it says that this is a very right-leaning issue. As a matter of fact, there's only one that even looks close to the center.
Yeah, if I was buying, I was like, it's his wall. Yeah, what can we do with it?
Right. Right. Is instead of saying, well, he's not going to be there when he gets back, you know. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly which one's closer to the truth, but yeah, selling off border wall parts before Trump takes office. So the Biden administration is using its final weeks to haul a massive amount of border wall materials away from the southern border to be sold off in a government auction, an apparent effort to hinder President-elect Trump's effort to secure the border. Interesting. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they were saying, like, it costs too much to have them stored and guarded.
Yeah.
All the time.
Kind of like those tanks in Afghanistan, right? And the jets in Afghanistan, right? It sounds like we've heard that one before.
Just leave it there. I'm pretty sure nobody's going to haul it off.
Yeah, nobody's going. Yeah, no, it's all right. They'll never figure out how to put gas in it.
I'm talking about the border. I'm talking about the walls now.
I was definitely talking about the tanks.
Yeah, the tanks are fine. They don't have the keys.
Take the keys with you. Right.
Put the boot on. Yeah, it's fine. Right.
Just set the alarm. Yeah. Anyway. So... Yeah, there's a few of these reports about San Diego County's city ordinances or sanctuary city status. I don't know. That's a lot. So, you know, we're on the front end of President-elect Trump coming in and claiming to do historic deportations. And from what I've seen, it looks like they're trying to target the people with criminal records first. But I think it remains to be seen how effective this is going to be and how comprehensive this can be, because it seems like with that being known, people who have records would just scramble, you know, just get out of town or go somewhere else. But I don't know.
I guess all you can do is wait and see. At this point,
yeah, I don't know where. What do you think about this? About the whole concept of deporting versus offering some sort of amnesty. What are your thoughts on the subject? How do you see it?
I don't know. I can't be black and white. I'm coming all over, you know, this, because you want to. You know, if they're here legally, you definitely want them to be here and be able to live their life. But the whole illegal thing, it's just a lot of things.
That's definitely what I'm asking about, is illegal. Yeah.
There's a lot of things, like the, you know, each state, they have the responsibility of taking care of these people. Like, I think we talked earlier about the kids, you know, in our school system, you know, going to school for free.
The DACA, the Dreamers, yeah.
Yeah, and they're... You know, filling up our school system. You know, it's definitely not the state's fault. You know, and they want to be here, and you don't want to turn anybody away. So, I don't know. It's a difficult subject for me. You know, I wish everybody could stay. You know, if we got the resources, then yeah, go ahead. You know, But, you know, if you're here, you're here.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a cutting point. But definitely, like, the criminals, you know, the ones that should definitely not be here, should definitely be kicked out.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things you got to worry about. You know, you can't set the president out. If it's okay to come here illegally, because eventually they're just going to accept you.
Right.
So you don't want that to happen.
Right.
So you can see them kind of all over the place.
Right. And, I mean, that's the point of an immigration process in the first place, right?
Right.
Is basically, here's the process by which you immigrate. And, yes, it costs money, and, yes, it takes time. But this is the process. And as a part of that, you have to learn the language. You have to learn the laws. You have to come. You have to understand these things, and then you take a citizenship test, and all of that is part of us vetting the people that want to join us versus the people that just want to exploit, right? Just
right.
show up and exploit the infrastructure and systems. And I think we have to figure out how we're going to execute on this and what it's going to look like. So, yeah, I don't know. I do recognize that without immigration, I believe we do actually have a population challenge, a challenge with population, because our death rate is higher than our birth rate in the United States. Now, it's not crazy. I don't think it's 30% higher, but it's high enough such that we need to offset it with immigration, with legal immigration, but we need to offset it with immigration. So, I do believe it needs to be done correctly.
All right.
You have to follow the law.
Yes. Maybe ease the process some type of way, make it more streamlined.
Right.
You know, whatever you have to do.
Right.
I guess one thing that is always in the back of my mind is, like, especially with women and children, like, they're running from something. Like, some people, you know, cannot stay in their country. They could actually lose their life.
Right.
That's why they come here.
Right.
Those are people you do not want to turn away.
Right. Well, and there's a process for that. Those are asylees, right? That is the point of an asylum-seeking process. The problem is that it can be abused, right? So if you just say, okay, well, the only reason you can come here is if you're seeking asylum, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, tens of millions of people seeking asylum.
Right.
And then the question is, okay, well, what conditions are considered justifiable for them to leave their country of origin and come here? I mean, political unrest, you know, because that applies to a significant portion of the world, right? There are a number of places that are politically unrested, and it's a hairy topic for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to it.
Yeah, and even if we wanted to, we certainly couldn't take all of them in. So it's matter of how do you choose and how do you vet? And the answer is you come up with a process, they follow it, and then through that process you're able to vet, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. But at least that's the intention of an immigration process. So
yeah. I say, like, the resources, if we have the resources to do it, then we should do it.
Right.
Well, but yeah, it's a sticky situation.
It is. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the coming months and years. So let's see. The last time we were, no, we haven't heard anything. We won't hear anything. So that we talked about the bill last time, the transgender transition bill for, you know, that banned it. We won't hear anything back from that until June, I think it is.
Mm.
As far as Tennessee trying to prevent transitioning teenagers or minors from transitioning. There was one that was tied to it that was about Tennessee trying to prosecute.
You're talking about the pills.
The pills. They're trying to prosecute organizations or anyone else from sending birth control.
Yeah, now, I think it was saying, like, if a child died,
right,
like, from that, then
$5 million.
Yeah,
yeah, and I got the impression that this was more for, like, morning after pill type thing, but I didn't I don't know the details. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that would fall under that category.
Right. Even if it's the day after, which I don't know. That's a lot because I don't know. I don't know. This probably gets into where some of us have differing opinions on abortion versus a blanket allowance type thing. I think that 2 days, you know, taking a morning after pill, I don't know that in my mind is at least the same thing as having an abortion. But I don't know. I haven't fully gone through all the ramifications of that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either. I think, from what we read, it sounds like it does fall into that category.
Yeah, yeah. At least from what I saw, and I was looking for it again. Illegal. That's immigration. Okay, I'll look for that in a second and see if I can find it because that was interesting. There's another one now. This is revisiting the immigration issue, but apparently Tennessee has proposed new measures to tackle illegal immigration by requiring law enforcement to transport illegal immigrants to sanctuary cities and target. So like they're wanting to change the driver's license that they issue if you're not a citizen to a different color or somehow denote it, which, I hadn't even considered that. But I guess it makes sense because for a long time, originally, that was part of the issue was having documentation to be here. Was you going and getting a driver's license. There were states that wouldn't issue them to you without a birth certificate or social security card or something like that, right? That was considered legal documentation. And so, I don't know. I guess that's something that they're considering doing here in Tennessee.
I guess that's a good idea.
Well, I think the question will be, does it help minimize illegal immigration or make it, or reduce illegal immigration? Because in my mind, the answer, we would want the answer to be yes for something that we adopt. So, but the whole idea of transporting them to sanctuary cities strikes me as strange. If ICE is deciding not to take custody of someone, then to then transport them out of the state away from their family, away from their workplace, potentially their school, because I also want to highlight this law has no exception for minors. That's not only damaging the community, but it's a waste of our local resources. So, yeah, calls into question what a sanctuary city is and whatever, if we're just going to take them to whatever city will allow them. And I don't know. There's a lot there. Sanctuary cities, transports. So, yeah. Now, with a lot of the over the past, let's say, month and a half, I feel like we kind of started intending to tackle or to discuss situations of race and race relations, and rather than just run through news articles, let's look at how something, because I think, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to position this. One of the original questions that I came up with was considering whether or not race relations have improved or gotten worse, or whether we had this idea when we were younger that things would continue to get better, and they may or may not have. But there's been a lot of focus, I would say, in the last 6 months, year, on race relations. And you know, there was a movie that was Am I Racist? that came out that was talking about specifically about the anti-racism industry and
Matt Walsh.
Yes, Matt Walsh and how that all, as a matter of fact, they're out of Nashville here, I think. They're part of the Daily Wire group with like Ben Shapiro and those guys. But the question, because that movie sort of paints the picture that there is a, I don't know about large, but at least a significant representation of people who are intentionally pushing the racist agenda, the racism agenda, infrastructural inequality or systemic racism, with the intention of creating disparities between races in people's minds, reinforcing disparities where they exist. Where do we stand on that? How do you see that reflected in people that you know and people that you talk to and on a day-to-day basis? What implications or reflections of real life does that have in your mind?
In my day-to-day life, almost zero, I would say, just because I have a smaller circle. Mm-hmm. As far as like the movie is concerned, I think it's more based than that. I think it's more about you perpetuate mm-hmm. those stereotypes and everything. To do one thing is to make money, because you saw in a movie there are classes for you to take mm-hmm. to see if you're very expensive classes, like $30,000 and $15,000. That's a lot of money for a class.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an Ivy League college or anything like that.
Right.
But if people are willing to pay that, then you're going to lean into that. You're going to let them believe whatever they want to believe, and you can go and just tell them a bunch of jargon.
Right.
And they'll tell you, you know, they'll pay you for that. You know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, we're living in a capitalistic economy. Mm-hmm. It's about making money.
Something's worth what someone will pay for it.
Yeah, what the market can bear, right?
Right. Well, you would hope that they wouldn't just drum up divisiveness, and derision for the sake of a payday, though. You know, that would be the hope, is that there's more integrity than that, that there's more... Yeah.
If you don't have ethics or morals.
Right. Right, and that movie specifically, it took me aback in a number of ways. It was shocking because it was like, oh my gosh, there are people like that out there.
Yeah.
That part surprised me. But the other part surprised me was just how rooted in hatred it seemed to be, right? It was just this very, very obvious anti-American, almost human sentiment that seemed to be running at the core of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. And it was obviously it was off-putting, but I don't know. I didn't really know how to take that movie. That movie was a lot. So,
yeah, I think really and truly, like, even if you're any type of race relations that you're dealing with, you want to bring up points that's not going to divide people. You want to bring points that's going to bring people together.
Right.
You know, I think that's really the key factor.
Right.
I think when we was talking about the person that died on the subway and the woman, she was hollering that it's racist mm-hmm. because the person killed him.
Yeah.
You know, and just the Black Lives Matter spokesperson or,
person in the BLM. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, no, it's not. And why would you bring that? You know, it's definitely, it exists, it's out there.
Right.
You know, why wouldn't you bring attention to stuff that's actually happening, not something that's, you know, pretty much a figment in her mind.
Right.
Or that group's mind.
Right.
Say that. So yeah, I think it's better is just we just focus on bringing people together. Not saying like everybody's the same and everything. Like, you're going to celebrate our differences.
Right.
You know, what brings us together, what makes us unique.
Right.
You know, that's the great thing about America. That's the great thing about immigration.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know.
So. Agreed. I think there is a fine line in as there is... as there will be with most things, but I think you're right. I think our diversity strengthens us and makes us stronger. But I also think there's a there's a core to that, and specifically because you mentioned immigration, and you know, that core is, are we folding people into the American culture? Are we folding people into adding their richness to our culture, or is it just coming in and just standing apart and, you know, creating pockets within? And, you know, the whole idea of a house divided can't stand. You know, the people that are Americans have to come together under the ideal that we are one people, that we are working for our mutual benefit. It's sort of the whole ideology of America. You know, that we've been, I've heard a lot of things being said. I've heard that we don't have our own culture. I've heard that, you know, that we just colonize and colonialize and take over other cultures. Obviously, all of that's ridiculous. But when you and I guess I noticed that this here in Nashville, when you consider that there are some communities that just no one speaks any English, right? Which, you know, I think it's Spanish, for an example, has been declared our second language, but if there are no ties to American culture whatsoever, then you're just basically creating pockets inside your. I don't know. Do you understand what I'm trying to get at? I'm trying to get at the idea that we all have to have a common American ideal that we strive toward.
Right.
Here in the country.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't celebrate other countries or other cultures. We need to be able to come together on the fact that we are quintessentially American, and add your color and your culture and your the richness that you bring by a facet of your life to the culture. But we have to continue to build up the American culture. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I guess what you're saying. Yeah. I guess it always starts off might seem like a little pocket, but that, you know, it grows as it integrates. You know, you have to include more and more people in that circle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well,
I guess a good example is Kansas, us in high school. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't actually have a clique in high school. We kind of just flowed through different groups, and, you know, by them knowing us, then they knew the people that we were hanging out with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like the same thing.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I'm sorry, we just weren't.
Yeah. I mean, eventually we sort of had our own clique, but we wouldn't have called it that just because people weren't dying to join it.
You know? The Real Losers Club. Right?
Yeah, right. Right. He-Man. Yeah, I'm not going to fit. Yeah. Yeah. But the... and I see a lot of that. You know, I've traveled a lot, and I've spent a lot of time in Central America, and specifically in Mexico, and more in Mexico. And it's just been interesting to see how we as Americans are regarded differently. And, you know, I look at, and things have changed since then. Things are a lot different these days because the immigration issue has been brought much more to the fore. It's been exacerbated significantly. There's a lot more. There's a much larger issue with illegal immigration going on, and it's gotten more recognition because of its scale and its scope. But I think the core of the issue has remained the same, which is, you know, we have to support our countrymen first. We have to support citizens first. Otherwise, there's not going to be enough to support everybody. That's just the reality of the situation in my mind. So,
yeah, that's one of the rules, right? You take care of home first.
Yeah, and that's all of us. It's not if you're this color or you're this race or you're this creed other than American. It's this, we have to take care of our own before we can consider outreach to other people. And if we do it right, we can have outreach, and we can have foreign aid, and we can have those things. But we have to be secure here at home first.
Mm.
So, I think that's a mandate of the government. So, is to protect us and take care of us. So,
it should be the mandate for every government.
Yeah, right. Well, and as we, and this should get more focus as we, I know we've been saying it for a couple of weeks now, but as we bring the people that we're going to bring in to interview and talk with them, that's been part of my goal, is to lay it out in the front end and say, look, we're not trying to make a right or wrong situation. We're trying to, you know, find out what it's like in some circumstances from the outside looking in. You know, what do you see? What challenges do you see? But when we get those managed, which, you know, as soon as we can, but when we get those managed, it will be, I'm really looking forward to hearing from other people with different perspectives about their take on American life, on American culture, and how it's perceived by them, you know, because I think we have in some situations a very myopic view. It's just sort of, this is the way we see it, and so I'm
you're talking about the American viewpoint?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying we kind of see it from the standpoint of having been raised here in America. We have a very, I chose the word myopic, but it's just, yes, from our standpoint, and I think it'll be interesting to hear people that don't have that in common, that come from other places, that are either in the process of immigrating or are here working legally and actually, you know, seeing the way that our country is dealing with all of these things. Because I think it raises some very good questions about, you know, how we're perceived to other people. You know, that if someone's a citizen of another country that's here working, you know, on a green card or here on a, you know, student visa or whatever the situation is, what does it look like from the outside looking in, and how do you see it? How does it compare and contrast to where you're from? And, you know, I think those questions will be very interesting to explore.
Yeah, so a lot of people have good ideas about what another country is just by looking at YouTube videos or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not until you actually encounter that culture for yourself, face on, that you really understand what's really going on.
Yeah, Mark Twain said that, and I don't remember the exact quote. I think it was, "Travel is the death of bigotry." You know, that once you travel and see other cultures and get to see them, you know, where you can identify with them, it changes the way that you see personal differences. I know it did for me. I know that traveling had a huge impact on me personally, but yeah. So anyway, we'll try to get that. We're going to try to get that over the next week or two. We may still be doing another one or two of these where it's just you and I talking through issues, but as soon as we can work those out, we will.
Yeah, people are busy.
Yes, people are very busy. Anyway, so yeah, Tennessee is, you know, Tennessee is making a name for itself with the abortion legislation, and I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm not sure where we're going to end up landing, but I do hope that we can. Yeah, what was that? Okay. I do hope we can find somebody to come in and talk about some of this stuff, because I'm interested in exploring it.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely have some questions.
Yeah, let's jump into that one for a second. So, Mangione, the guy who supposedly executed the United Healthcare CEO, right there. Now that article is ridiculous. It's talking about freeing him because his conditions suck. But but this one blew me away, because here's a guy who, by all rights, it appears, got fed up with healthcare and decided to, you know, go vigilante. And the response we saw online was troubling, it seemed like.
Yeah, it's troubling. Anytime you praise somebody for killing somebody, right, or the death of anybody,
right,
yeah, you're taking the wrong step.
Right. If it seems like you're worshiping mayhem, you might be worshiping mayhem. And it was something like, when it went out on social media, and I'm going to botch these numbers, but it was something like it had like 40,000 likes and 50,000 laughs, right? Mm-hmm. Like just tens of thousands of people are laughing, you know, that he had it coming. And it's like, you know, this isn't, I mean, I get online has its own way of approaching things, but just celebrating destruction or celebrating death like that just doesn't strike me as something that we should all be idealizing. You know, we shouldn't be holding that up as, you know, holding like you, like we encourage people to do this. That's not that. That's vigilante justice is not the way to go about handling things.
Yeah, and if you actually enjoyed what he did, then you need to take a long look at yourself.
Yeah, you should really ask yourself why. Yeah. It's like what, because I think and this one's coming up because so many people understand the frustration around being disgruntled with the healthcare system and
insurance
and the insurance system and being, you know, denied over and over and having, you know, I think we can all identify with that. I imagine most of us have stories in some form or another of how impactful that's been to our lives. And in some situations, it's extremely so. But it's still one thing to say the system is messed up, we need to come up with a way to fix it. And it's a completely different thing to just seem to worship at the altar of, you know, of rebellion. Mm-hmm. Just do whatever you want. Yeah. We should, you know. I was surprised at how positive some of the reactions seemed to be to it. It was disgusting, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I think we have to be able to hold ourselves to a higher ideal than that. We have to say, you know, even though this is something that I don't think we can all identify necessarily with the murder aspect of it. We can identify with the disappointment aspect of it. Like, here's an industry or a company that it feels like has been victimizing Americans, excuse me, in numerous ways for a very long time. Still, I think we should be looking at it and saying, okay, how do we find a way to legislatively produce change or with policy produce change?
Right.
But to just be celebrating a kid who got fed up and killed somebody doesn't strike me as very principled or very ideologically sound.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing is that, I mean, you brought this to my attention. I didn't notice it, but the backgrounds of both these people, the guy that shot him, he actually came from a well-to-do family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think he was Ivy League.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, he had a lot of things going for him.
But yeah, from it looks like he came from a wealthy family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus the CEO had pulled himself up by the bootstraps and worked his way out of poverty into, and I don't know the exact details on it. What I heard is that he had come from very little and worked his way up into the position he was in. And so it was this strange juxtaposition of a wealthy person getting fed up with and assassinating a either newly wealthy or, you know, or less advantaged person. And somehow it's still trying to be painted as a Robin Hood story. You know, this fight for the cause type situation. And it's like, no, you know, all things aren't that simple. As a matter of fact, I remember when we first saw it, one of the first things you noticed was something that struck me was he had two kids, right? He had two teenage boys, I believe. And so he's survived by a wife and two kids that are now without their father. And you know, there's just that's tragic. No matter how you look at it, it's heartbreaking.
So, yeah.
So, you know, and there's very little someone could do to justify, in my mind, that type of comeuppance. Yeah, that type of anything. Just that type of situation being, you know. I mean, I think if we could all make a case for why that would have been okay if that had been Adolf Hitler, but, you know, there's very few circumstances. And
baby Adolf Hitler.
Right. But there's very few circumstances where it's socially acceptable, and it seems that if we are seeing something like this that somehow has become socially acceptable, it might be more along the lines of supporting the a reason for indicting our culture rather than saying, oh, look, this is a good thing we died. I can't see glorifying it, but
yeah, it's like a moral degradation of our
right
system or people or
right.
youth. Yeah, like I said, you definitely need to look at yourself if you're praising what happened.
Yeah, all manner of evil happen when good men see the right thing to do and choose not to do it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I definitely think this is a situation where more people need to be standing up and saying, you know, this is completely unequivocally wrong, and glorifying it is wrong, and, you know, but, yeah. Well, so... yeah, like I said, I just wanted today to be kind of a chat and just see, you know, just kind of have more of a relaxed thing. I didn't necessarily intend to comb through news as much, but yeah, we're going to keep working on getting someone else in or getting the first person in and sitting down for an interview. It turns out there's a lot of hurdles we have to navigate for that to happen. So in the interim, we'll be back either next week or with someone next week. And I guess that's, for me, that's all I've got today. Do you have anything you wanted to cover before we drop?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything we wanted to cover. Maybe we can cover local news.
All right.
Somebody will get a kick out of that, what's going on in Tennessee.
Right.
What's going on with the farms.
Right. Yeah, there's we saw a few things in there. Well, yeah, that sounds good. I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a good week. And yeah, we'll be back.